From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Kevin West begins his newest book called The Cook's Garden like this. "This is a book about flavor," he writes. "It is a book about how to become a better cook by stepping into the garden." His is not just a cookbook, though. It's also a book about how to grow edible crops from seed to harvest. So a cookbook and a gardening book all in one, highlighting exceptional varieties to cultivate and enjoy. Since this is the start of serious winter squash season, and Kevin and I both delight in them, growing and cooking winter squash is our topic today. But first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, HighMowingSeeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, WhiteFlowerFarm.com.
Kevin West grew up in East Tennessee as part of a strong farming and gardening lineage, and today lives and gardens organically in the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts. He's the author of Saving the Season, A Cook's Guide to Home Canning, Pickling, and Preserving, and now of The Cook's Garden. And I'm so glad for a chance to talk to him again on the show today. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Hi, Margaret. Very well. It's great to be back with you.
I looked back in my records, and like 10 years ago or something, we talked about how to make apple butter on what was then a radio program that I did.
That was a long time ago. And back then I was living in Los Angeles and shopping at the Santa Monica Farmers Market every Wednesday.
Exactly. And now we're not so far apart. We're just across a little bit across I-90-ish, the Massachusetts Turnpike from each other, I think, or something.
That, we call it country neighbors, right?
Yes, exactly. And so we'll do, I should say, before we get started, I'll do a book giveaway with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. So people can enter to win. And I've been enjoying the book. It's a big book. It's got lots going on. As I said in the introduction, it's gardening and cooking. So two areas to learn about. Right in the book, another quote that I loved right early in the book, you say, "Gardening is now a facet of what it means to me to eat well." Mm-hmm. You say that. And so tell us a little bit about your sort of motivation for writing this and how you would describe this sort of hybrid gardening cooking volume.
Margaret, I love that you started with the line that this is a book about flavor. This is a book about eating well, about living well, about having a connection to our food and to the seasonal calendar and to seasonal vegetables in particular. It's not fundamentally about self-sufficiency or homesteading or living off the grid or anything kind of hyper, hippie, independent, back to the land in spirit. As much as I admire that kind of ambition, what I really want to do is to harken back to the way that I grew up around seasonal food, which is to say, as you mentioned, I come from a farming family on my dad's side. And my mother, who comes from Tennessee hillbillies, really, my dad and mom both grew up around gardens, and they were both gardeners all of their lives. And so my experience of being around a garden is that you would grow some things. You would look forward to the tomatoes, and my mother grew all kinds of herbs that she cooked with every meal. You might have a favorite squash that you grew. My father always grows okra. So there's always something in the garden, but you're not depending on it because you're also shopping at the farmer's market, or you're also swapping vegetables with some of your neighbors, or you have an uncle or an aunt who is growing something. So it's this idea of just being close to the seasons and being close to the garden. We called it cooking from a garden. But again, the idea is that you layered in some homegrown food into your everyday cooking. And that's really the starting point for The Cook's Garden. It's this idea of taking your everyday cooking life and making it richer and more flavorful and more creative by using seasonal vegetables and some homegrown herbs and vegetables.
Right. And so now your garden, where you are now, where your edibles, the part that your edibles are grown? Is it raised beds or is it in the ground or how big is it? Just describe it briefly for us.
Yeah, my garden is about 60 by 75 feet, approximately. It's in the ground. The garden is divided into quadrants, which makes it easier to rotate, right? To schedule my rotations, and also just makes management easier generally. It's principally a vegetable garden, although I also have some ornamentals in there, such as irises and some lilies and some peonies. It's my cutting garden as well, and then I have herbs scattered here and there. And there are little strips of of grass and little strips, little places where I let the weeds come up to benefit the pollinators. And it's surrounded by a deer fence. And my neighbor Del Martin, on whose land I actually garden, strangely, my garden is not on my place, it's on a neighbor's place, because the property, the garden has a slight southern tilt, south-facing tilt. And so that slope, that gentle slope, improves drainage. And as you know, we've got a lot of heavy New England clay here in the Berkshires. So that gentle slope improves drainage. And it also, because it's tilted towards the sun in the springtime, it helps the garden wake up a bit quicker. And it's just such a good garden spot that I can't give it up.
Okay. And we have a cooperative neighbor, so that's good. So I promised we would extol the virtues of winter squash, which is probably my favorite vegetable of all. A funny story for this year, 2025, I kind of gave up my vegetable plantings because we were having heat domes and drought and whatever. And I just thought, nope, I'm going to go to the farmer's market. I give up. But my compost heap didn't give up. Out popped a tangle of winter squash vines, and I didn't know what it would be. And it was obviously something I had scooped out in eating a winter squash however long ago and put the seeds in there as my composting them, so to speak. And so these vines were crazy, wild all over the place, and I just left them. And don't I harvested seven very good sized, they're delicata
Wow.
type squash, and
Amazing.
they are just absolutely delicious. So you never know. What did you grow this year, accidentally or on purpose? Which winter squash?
Wow, that's amazing. It reminds me of something that my mother used to say. She would say, "A seed wants to grow,"
Yes.
and she would say, "Look around your compost bin and look in your beds from last year, and you'll see a million volunteers coming up, particularly squash and volunteer tomatoes." And that was her way to reassure me that the garden would be fine. A seed wants to grow. We're just kind of helping
Yes,
out the process. So
yes.
that was a it's a wonderful sort of saying I always carry with me because it's reassurance that even if you're a little nervous about having a garden, it's reassurance that things are going to work out okay. So, Margaret, to answer your question about what I grew this year, I have a dire confession to make before
Uh-oh.
you and your listeners, which is that I didn't grow any winter squash this year
Uh-huh.
because of commitments I had around, my book launch and things like that. I grew summer squash, but I didn't get out any winter squash. However, having said that, I typically grow a couple of different varieties that I choose for flavor because I love them so much. And one of them is Honey Patch, which is the newest iteration of Honey Nut, which is a squash that I'm sure you know, developed by Michael Masurek, a plant breeder who came out of Cornell and who's one of the co-founders of Row 7 Seeds with Chef Dan Barber. And Honey Patch is, imagine a honey nut. I mean, a butternut, excuse me. Imagine a butternut and then shrink it down to about one third the original size. But all of the flavor of the original butternut is concentrated in that little package. And the honey patch or the honey nut is absolutely delicious in flavor. And the size is just right for two servings. So they
Right.
grow prolifically, they produce very generously, and they're just wonderful to cook. So that's the winter squash that I go to every year, except this year. And there are many other varieties that we could talk about, but that's my number one recommendation for anyone.
I know in the book you also mention another variety, I think, also from Row 7 Seeds. And I don't even know how to pronounce it, Robin's Koginut, Koginut.
That's what I say is Robin's Koginut. I'm not
Yeah.
sure I've heard anyone pronounce
Pronounce
it. Who knows what they're
it.
talking about? So you and I can decide it's Koginut.
And in that one, the recipe in the book, I believe you stuff it. You have it as a stuffed squash, which is kind of, I've never, you know, I'm vegetarian and I cook for one, and so I'm kind of boring sometimes. And so a lot of times I just take the simplest route and just, you know, roast a squash or whatever. But it looked so beautiful,
Oh gosh,
you know,
that's
just as
a
a,
it's a
yeah.
beautiful squash. I developed that recipe for Thanksgiving because
Right.
I wanted to come up with a vegetarian alternative to the Thanksgiving turkey, and I was looking for something that would be beautiful, right, and would be dramatic, and would be delicious, and would be able to hold the table in the way that a whole roasted bird holds the table. And so I had grown a coconut that year. This was, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, and the coconut had done very well. It's not a huge. It has a pumpkin-like shape, but it's relatively modest. Each one weighs maybe, oh, I don't know, 2 to 3 pounds, let's say, and it's just the right size to cut off the top and scoop out the seeds and stuff it and roast it whole. And the flavor again is delicious, and the skin is edible, so that when you bring it to the table, you can just cut it into slices, almost like cutting a layer cake. You know how you cut out a triangular slice, and the thing is bronzed in color after being roasted in the oven. And then the inside, I use a cornbread stuffing, with lots of onions and shallots, and I use some chestnuts in there. You could use mushrooms if you wanted to. A non-vegetarian could throw in some oysters even if they wanted to, for an oyster stuffing. But at any rate, you open it up and there's this just fragrant, aromatic stuffing inside. And it was such a hit that my friends Adele and Christine Martin, whose land I grow on, their daughter asked for the recipe. She loved it so much. And so in the book, the recipe is dedicated to Claudia because it really was such a great compliment to me as a cook, that she liked it so much that she wanted the recipe.
So whichever squash we grow, and we can talk about some more, one thing that's really important as a gardener, besides picking a good variety to start with and starting it at the right time and, you know, caring for it and all the good horticultural cultural things, is picking it at the right time, harvesting at the right time, and also curing, I think, with the squash. I bought at the co-op not long ago some delicatas, and they were flavorless. It was very early in the season, in the harvest season, and whoever had sold them to them, you know, just hadn't cured them. And I think that's a step that a lot of people don't realize. You don't just take it off the vine, and sometimes it works. Sometimes it's had enough sunshine and warmth out there, and it's at the right stage of maturity that it's kind of pre-cured, so to speak. But other times it can really use a little extra warmth and TLC before you eat it, yes?
Yes, that's right. And I'm so glad you bring that up, because one of the things that as home gardeners we have to adjust slightly is how we get things from the garden to the kitchen, right? If we go to the grocery store, then everything is already ready for us. Even at the farmer's market, most of the big decisions have been made. But in the garden, there's a little bit of learning, which my book goes into, around what's the best season to harvest and how to prepare things for the kitchen. And as you say, winter squash, they take quite a long time, right? The squash vine is large and vigorous, right? The squash itself is a fruit, so it comes late in the growing season, or late in the life cycle of the plant, once the plant has reached its mature size. And winter squash are eaten ripe. So you add all of that together, and it takes, at least here in New England, southern New England, all of the growing season to get the vine up and growing, and then the fruit set, and then the fruit to ripen. And what I want to do typically is to harvest the squash once the stem has started to dry. Because once the stem has started to dry, you know the plant is shutting down. And essentially, the plant has put all of its energy, all of its carbohydrates, all of its goodness into the squash. And now it's sealing off that stem. And at that point, you can pick it and bring it inside. And as you say, I like to leave them in a front. I put them in a front room that fills up with afternoon sun, so it's
That's
warm.
exactly what I do.
Yeah, right. So it's like it's the one room in the house where you don't need a sweater in the fall, you know, because it stays warm and it's very dry. And the squash then kind of finish their ripening process. And I think what happens is part of it is that they, the skin firms up, right? They get a kind of almost slightly waxy coating. They close themselves down for the winter, and then they're ready for storage. And at that point, they're ready to eat, and they have maximum flavor.
Right, and the starchy whatever, I don't know if it's technically starch is converted to sugar, but it's something, I may be oversimplifying, but that's kind of what happens. Similar with another thing that people grow sweet potatoes, which is another, probably my second favorite vegetable, and then they think you can just eat them right away, and boy, you're missing out on some of the sweetness if you don't
You're
cure those.
in for a
Yeah,
disappointment if
it's
you bring
not
it straight
gonna.
from the garden.
Exactly. So, looking up the aftercare of these is worthwhile, yeah? I mean, that's, because you've gone to the trouble of growing it, picking the right variety and growing it all the way through. So there's
And
that.
Margaret, I love sweet potatoes as well. Having grown up in the South in East Tennessee, I ate a lot of sweet potatoes because we just love them down there. I haven't had great success with them here in New England. And in a way, my response to not having great success with sweet potatoes is to grow more winter squash because they
Yes.
occupy a similar place in the kitchen, right? They're
Yes,
orange,
yes.
sweet,
Yes,
starchy,
yes.
delicious. And so yeah, I kind of gave up on sweet potatoes and and went all in with winter squash.
So there's another recipe in the book that surprised me. Speaking of what works in the kitchen and so forth. There's a stew, a winter squash stew, and we'll have the recipe along with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. It has ingredients in it that I've never combined with winter squash, and I'm not 12 years old either. It has tomatoes and tomato paste, and I don't think I've ever had winter squash with a tomato. Do you know what I mean? In a sauce with tomatoes. It's just so interesting. I looked and I thought, what? What would that taste like? It's funny because I feel like I've tried so many flavors, and maybe that's very obvious and commonplace, but it wasn't to me. So tell us about that stew because it's lovely. It sounds lovely.
That's interesting. I love this stew, and I make it every year for a big party I have at my house the day after Thanksgiving. I do a chestnut roast here for all of the neighbors to come in and change their palate away from Thanksgiving. And the reason it works well at any scale. You can make it, a small pot, or you can make a huge pot. And the key to the recipe, I think, is this advice that a friend of mine gave me. It was winter. It was the cold of winter, and I was standing in my kitchen and I was looking at these Kogi nut squash that I had just pulled out of storage, trying to figure out what to do with them. And my friend Wes, chef from Los Angeles, Wes Witzel, he called and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm trying to figure out how to cook these Kogi nut squash." And he pronounced these generous words. He said, "Warming North African spice." And I thought, "Oh yeah, totally."
Oh,
And
okay.
so when I started to think about North African spice, I started to think about sunshine, and the winter squash is a kind of congealed or coagulated sunshine, but also tomatoes. Tomatoes carry the flavors and colors of summer into the wintertime. And I don't know, just had the idea to put them together and and started throwing spices at it. A little coriander, a little cumin, little shaving of cinnamon, black pepper, all of those flavors that kind of evoke North Africa without being
Right.
too literal about it.
Right. Well, it sounds delicious, and that's definitely one that I'm going to try. So I was glad to see again, it just I was like, what? And do you know what I mean? It's funny how some things that you have more confidence as a cook, obviously, than I do, but it may have seemed obvious to you, and it surprised me so much. So I'm excited about that. And then even with your basic roasted squash, like a lot of us will cut a butternut or something, the equivalent in half the long way, and roast it. You roast it on parchment paper, I believe, in the oven on, on a tray and parchment. But you have a little twist that you add sort of
Yeah,
shortly after it comes out of the oven,
this is a
right?
naughty trick. Should I
Yeah.
share the naughty trick?
Tell us. Yeah.
It as you say, it's the standard thing. You cut the squash in half, you scoop out the seeds, and you roast it cut side down until the juices start to caramelize a little bit. That's how it's going to be done. And if you mash it, it'll be soft. And so then I pull it out of the oven and I turn the squash cut side up, And then immediately while it's hot, I pour a tablespoon or a little bit more of heavy cream into the cup, into the seed cavity. And the cream will soak in to the squash. So if you want, you don't have to let your guests know. You can kind of hide the evidence because it soaks in and it creates just this sort of rich a rich custardy texture and adds some richness, of course. And you don't really notice it, except you just notice that the squash is so delicious. And so a sprinkling of flaky salt and a little bit of cracked black pepper over the top, and basta. That is dinner. And people love it. People really love it. They say, "Oh, I didn't know I like squash so much." And
And it's
well,
that little something extra that's almost invisible at that point.
correct,
No, I love
right.
that. So to switch gears, back to the sort of garden half of this book, so to speak, and it's not half and half, it's in they're entwined together like squash vines. You have a list of seed catalogs, and now I'm going to ruin your life and blow your budget by suggesting a couple that aren't on your list. So watch
Oh,
out,
yes.
Evan. You like you've confessed also that you like sweet potatoes and that you haven't you've kind of not done well with them. So the leading the person with the most sweet potatoes and the most winter squash in the country, if not the world, is this person in Iowa, Klamath, Iowa, called Glenn Drowns, who founded in, I think, 1988, a place called Sand Hill Preservation Center, open all open pollinated seed. And he used to have 700 different varieties of winter squash.
Oh my
Now,
goodness.
yeah, so watch out. He now lists only, she says, in quotes, 119 plus a dozen or so pumpkins. So, like 140 kinds. The entire collection originally he gave to this Seed Savers Exchange many years ago, and he's been very active with them for a long time. So they weren't lost, the other 500 or what, 600 or whatever. But at any rate, it's just for a person who likes winter squash, it's pretty fabulous to do some reading. And for a person who likes sweet potatoes but has failed with them, someone like Glenn, reading his descriptions, he's in Iowa. The climate, it may be that it's not a southerly place, is what I'm saying. There may be one that's more suitable to here than the ones you've been getting. I mean, that's the other thing, is finding things that are regionally appropriate. So,
100%, 100%. I love having that suggestion. I've written it down here. And the point that you just made about varietal character and how varietal character is let's see. The thing about varietal character is that it covers all kinds of different traits. So it may grow, it may cover traits such as flavor, but it also covers traits that are sort of invisible, so to speak, which is to say how adapted that variety is to a certain set of growing conditions. And so there are certain tomatoes that are more adapted to cooler climate, like the Amish paste tomato, as opposed to the Italian San Marzano tomato, right? And the same holds true for every kind of crop, really. So that's a I'll go and see what he has to offer
It's
for
totally fun,
northern
and
growers.
don't blame me. Don't blame me. And then locally near both of us is Turtle Tree Seed, the biodynamic seed company, the largest
Yes.
biodynamic, and they have a butternut that they've been selecting, saving, only using the seed from the longest lasting squash each year from their harvest, becomes the seed crop for subsequent years. And so they've been selecting for lastingness for 25 or so years. So their butternut is like, wow, it really
Great.
lasts, in well late into the next year. So that's a great thing. We have maybe 2 minutes, and I just want to say clean up. Because before, we may have already harvested, or we're harvesting, and cleanup is so important with squash, I think, especially if you've ever had any pests and everything. Do you, because you're an organic gardener like I am, you're not spraying stuff. You're
No, no.
right. So do you
No,
sort of
no.
have a put the garden to bed? And you mentioned something about rotations earlier. I just was curious. Any tips about that to close out the
It's funny, I say it just exactly the same way you did. I think about putting the garden to bed at the end of the year. I clean up all of the debris, clean up old vines. I don't like the mess lying around, because it potentially harbors pests and
Indeed, it
pathogens.
does.
So I
Yes.
clean up the plant residues, and then I put down a thick layer of mulch to overwinter the garden. And that mulch by next spring, when I say mulch, I'm typically using leaf mulch.
Right.
And what happens is that by next spring, that mulch is well on its way to being compost. And so you have a head start on next year's fertility, while the mulch also protects the integrity of the soil over the winter, so you're not suffering any winter erosion.
Right. Well, Kevin West, I mean, it's fun to talk to you about this, and it's fun to be near neighbors. I guess someday we're actually going to have to get together somewhere in between.
I hope so. Barbara, I would
Yeah,
love
that
that.
would be
Such fun talking to you today.
completely fun. But the new book is The Cook's Garden, and we'll have the giveaway, as I said, with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. And I hope I'll talk to you again soon. Maybe we can do some virtual shopping for seeds together on the program, in
That's
December,
wonderful.
January. Yeah,
Let's do
yeah.
it. All
All
right.
right.
Thank you,
Thank
Margaret.
you. Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And thanks to all of you for tuning in. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, HighMowingSeeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, WhiteFlowerFarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of AwayToGarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.